some of the... Well, you said the biochemists complain that their contribution hasn't been recognized. You mean in the case that they preceded in some discovery, perhaps, even?
Well,
that's certainly true of what you could call exclusion chromatography, where it was rediscovered by John, what's-his-name, the man at Dow, who did it with styrene divinyl benzene gel, but the biochemists were already doing gel filtration, and it was a well-developed technique. What others? Actually, don't know. Enough myself.
Well, maybe we could go back to some of the other work you were doing in the early 50s. So, you know, after the light scattering papers, or a series of those, you took up the excluded volume effect and curved polymers.
Well, certainly a part of light scattering anyhow, in a way. And then my most brilliant student of all time came along, Fixman.
Mm-hmm.
Really, absolutely tremendous fellow.
And how, I mean, did he come to MIT just to work on the kinds of problems you were working on, or did he sort of stumble into your lab?
If I understood what Marshall told me, I think one of his teachers at Washington U suggested that he come to MIT and look me up, and I'm not sure who that was. It might have been a man named Nagel who had once worked for G.N. Lewis, but and whom I may have met but never really knew. But whoever it was, Marshall said he was urged to go to MIT. Al Holzer, who was his classmate and who was now prof back at Washington U, was urged to go to Harvard and work with Paul Doty, so they both kind of came east at the same time. And however that may be, it didn't take Marshall too long to decide he wanted to work for me, and me to decide that he was an absolutely fantastically bright guy who bet against Kirkwood and won when he did his postdoc. And this is a problem that hadn't quite, it's in Bruno's account. It's the light scattering calibration. The lower the big values, some people said, well, the Einstein theory is wrong because there's an internal field problem that must be taken into account, and Einstein just sidestepped that, as a matter of fact, successfully. But he didn't do complete molecular theory. Should it not be investigated further? And I remember when Marshall was in his last year with me at MIT, so that was 1953, Jack Kirkwood came by for a visit. Marshall had already won a Jewett Fellowship, which was a postdoc the Bell Labs were giving, and had asked Kirkwood to take him on, and Kirkwood had already agreed. So Marshall was bound for New Haven shortly thereafter, but Kirkwood stopped by and to talk, well, what might they do? And it was agreed that Marshall would try to work on the molecular theory of light scattering all the way back from basic principles and see whether Einstein was right or not. And I remember Kirkwood saying, he says, no, I think probably there'll be a correction to Einstein. Well, as it worked out, there wasn't. But it was Fixman who first did the molecular theory to the stage where one could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Later, there were other papers, Peter Mazur in Holland and Bob Zwanzig, who patched it a little farther. Fixman had sort of cut off after a couple of terms, enough to see that it was going to go. And but he did a lot of work. He was thinking on his own. In fact, the first paper in which he's a co-author is by Zim, Stockmeyer, and Fixman on excluded volume.
Mm-hmm.
Story of that one. Bruno and I had been corresponding for years, and so when he came back from Berkeley to General Electric, again, I was being wooed by GE, and the summer I spent there working with Bruno was partly, again, a tryout. Not that I had real notions of leaving academia, but, well, every so often you want to ask yourself whether there isn't something else you don't know about. And we had this problem to work on, the excluded volume problem, because we'd both been referees of a paper that gave a wrong answer. And so we decided, gee, we can improve on that. We're pretty sure this is wrong. We don't know how it's going to come out. And we spent the summer, and we got an answer. It's published in that paper. That was Zim and myself. Marshall, that was, I think, maybe the summer of 51 that I spent over there. And when I came back, told Fixman about it and showed it all to him, and he said, gee, that seems like kind of a long way around the barn to get the result. I wonder if there isn't a better way to do it. This is the more really straightforward cluster expansion that he eventually published in 55, but it's in his thesis. So he produced that in a couple of months, and so we quickly enrolled him as a co-author to give a partial result that he'd obtained that we hadn't got yet, and I guess to save ourselves a little bit, but he didn't mind that at all. And then he went on, did the general theory, and published that alone.
Were these, at this point, most of the calculations you were doing were still the old-fashioned way, weren't they? I mean, they were just sort of brute force calculations of these various...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
...long expansions.
That's right, that's right.
When, one thing that I remember a very interesting conversation I had with Paul Florey a year or so, I mean, just 6 months before he died, in which he was saying that he really began to appreciate the impact of computers in the late 50s, early 60s even, in that he could begin to tackle problems that he'd had to just put aside years earlier because he realized there was no way to make the calculation.
Yeah, yeah.
And what, you must have come across the same kind of possibilities in your work. Since you were
actually, the person who realized that about excluded volume was Fred Wall. He was already publishing things in the middle 50s that were very important in that connection. Yeah, F.T. Wall. Some of those results have stood up pretty well, particularly on the dimensions of chain molecules with a lattice model. Yeah. Actually, I remain to this day pretty much a dunce on the computer, although my collaborators have been using it for over 20 years. Peter Verdier, that's who implemented Gil King's notion of watching chain dynamics by little hopping motions on a lattice.
Yeah.
He came to me as a postdoc at MIT still in 59. And sometimes you get a good postdoc for the wrong reason. Peter was a Bright Wilson student and a microwave spectroscopist, and he, at that time, thought of polymers as gunk, just as most physical chemists did when they got started into it. And he had a wife, Marilyn, who wanted to take a master's degree in inorganic chemistry at MIT with Charles Coryell. So Peter said, geez, I got to have a job while Marilyn finishes her graduate work, and so he asked me if I'd take him on. I said, okay. And there was one problem that he worked on a bit and he found kind of dull, and then he thought of this thing, and he developed the programs to do the first rudimentary chain dynamics on a lattice, something, by the way, he's still doing at the Bureau of Standards. He had a manuscript that I wasn't going to put my name on, but then I found a big connection to reality that I contributed, so I decided, after all, I'll put my name second on the paper. I had mixed feelings about that one. Maybe he should have been allowed to publish it alone, I don't know. It was clearly his invention of the method. But I think my interpretation of his results. So it was a collaboration, all right. After that, sure, there were other things like the work with Carl Schultz on the shapes of chain molecules that couldn't have done without a computer. And
well, I wonder if we could just pause for a minute.